question. I mean, I really think we have to, if we're going to be, if we're serious about this, we have to recognize that people need jobs, they need housing, they need a decent material life. We should have much less inequality. It should be more equal, and we could all live with less, and more of us should have that. But we do, we can't just have a utopian vision where all of a sudden we're just going to, you know, we're not going to consume anymore, because we have to also employ people. We need to find a realistic path.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with that. And over the 2 years I've been doing my radio program, I've interviewed other people, and I've talked about projects that I know about that absolutely are not the final answer. But what really causes me a useful amount of hope is that there are people all over the country, all over the world, here and there, who are already working on this transition. Before we started recording, I described to you what I'm doing here on my quarter acre suburban property. That's part of the transformation. And the transformation could employ a lot of people. I've done most of the work here on my own property myself. I have paid people to do things I don't know how to do, like install a solar hot water heater or the heat pump. I know that transforming suburbia would create millions and millions of jobs. This completes part one of our conversation and interview with Lisbeth Cohen. You are listening to Creating a Preferred Future. This is Jan Spencer coming to you from Eugene, Oregon. You can hear podcasts and find links to related content on YouTube at my website, suburbanpermaculture.org, suburbanpermaculture.org. Until next time, be strong, be smart, be well. But don't be shy.
Always try to put in at least 5 or 6 hours at cable, right. Because we're
the Fire Sign Theater.
So listen to 90.7 FM for
Andy. Whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Meridorn Duckler and Alice Christine Walker. They are talking about Sighted Land, which is part of a show at Blackfish Gallery called Land Art. Sighted Land is at an undisclosed location near the Portland airport on private land, and is accessible by a free shuttle bus that runs Saturday the 13th, 20th, and 27th of August. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Meridorn.
Thank you so much, Joseph, for having me. I am the curator of the show Land Art at Blackfish Gallery, a genre I have loved for, I don't know, as long as I've loved art. And it was important to me to have a show about land art in the gallery as a group show with invited guests. But you can't possibly have a land art show if you don't have sighted outdoor work that's made in response to an immediate environment. And that's what we have. So we have a shuttle bus that takes you from the gallery to sometimes related outdoor art that's sighted. So sometimes there's a correspondence between the artists that put art in the gallery and the artists that put it outside. Sometimes there's not. Either way, it's fascinating. In my love of land art, I spent one whole summer just journeying between the many available iconic pieces of land art that are all over the country, particularly in the West. I started, of course, with Robert Smithson's Spiral Jetty in Utah, spectacular piece of art. These all these places, by the way, followed the tenets of land art, which was that they would be accessible. They weren't in a gallery. There was no guard. There was no visiting hours. There was no fee to come there. You just showed up. And I love the part that requires the visitor, the participant, the viewer to just show up and be there and feel what's going on. Spiral Jetty is, of course, an incredible piece of American art. I think it turned 50 this year. And I'm gonna say a little bit more about others I went to, but I have to strongly recommend, despite hard gas prices, that if you have a chance to travel to these unbelievably moving, weirdly emotional, and very profound works of art.
Where is Spiral Jetty?
Spiral Jetty is in Utah, on the Great Salt Lake. And every time you go, it's going to look very different because the water, of course, rises and falls. Sometimes it's almost submerged. Other times you can walk the entire jetty. And Smithson knew when he made the work as a piece of land art that that was going to be the fact. You never saw the same, just like you know the old saying, never step in the same stream twice. Well, that's land art. You never see the same piece twice. As the crow flies in another part of Utah, you can see another wonderful work made by his wife, Nancy Holt. Smithson died, unfortunately, very young in a plane accident while he was surveying work that he was going to be making next. Nancy Holt, I think, was with us until maybe 2016, 2017. Her piece is called Sun Tunnels, and they're very large pipes, four of them set in a configuration according to a constellation. Very people love to go to them during the solstice when the interior parts of it line up. But they're also spectacular. You can go out there and can spend the night, open to everyone, no hours, no cars.
Well, these are like big concrete pipes, like little sections.
Exactly.
A short, fat pipe, and they're like, you know, 6 feet tall or something, or 10 feet.
Oh, yeah. You can stand in them, you can hang out in them, you can sit in them all day. It's a little hot in Utah, but they're quite cool in both senses of the word.
It's a little Stonehenge kind of thing. You can.
It's exactly right, Joseph. Stonehenge kind of thing. But even if you're not there on the solstice when they line up, it's still incredible. You go out there. There's absolutely nothing to see. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's not a lot on the horizon. And then you come across these mysterious, gigantic cylinders.
Is there a gift shop or anyone selling tamales out of a cooler?
You know, there's a lot of hippies in vans, and I bet you could buy something from them. Not saying what that is, but I have no doubt they would barter and trade. But sadly, no gift shop.
And then another one you went to was just a giant cut in a landscape that was slowly filling with rubble. What's that called?
You describe it very well, Joseph. That's exactly what it is. And that's Michael Heiser's Double Negative. And that's in Nevada. And it's up on top of a mesa called Mormon Mesa. Quite a difficult car climb. But when you get up there, of course, wonderful views, incredible views. And then two big chunks cut out of the landscape. It's funny when you go up there, there's little relics left by people. I don't know that they are even for Double Negative, but it's evidently a popular teenage hangout spot now. It's weird because it's a really very famous piece of American art. When we drove there, we weren't sure where it is, a little tricky to find. We stopped at a gas station, we were in a bar, we were in a restaurant, several places. Asked them all, where is Double Negative? And their answer was uniformly, what? So not well known in the community, but very well known in the art world. Again, cannot recommend enough taking a trip to Double Negative. No, go ahead.
So they're still a little elitist then if the locals don't even know that they exist. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think that it's the flip side of the land artist's desire to be populist and leave it kind of in the hands of the viewer. So they weren't going to, in the art world, these pieces are very well known. It is interesting that in the community they're not. But I think, I gotta say, I think that was by design, not necessarily to be against community, but again, you shift the responsibility onto the art seeker or seeker of any kind to go after what they're looking for. I may not be right about that. You have to ask Michael Heiser, who's famously reclusive and doesn't give a lot of interviews. Mm-hmm. But that's my guess. So yeah, you could say it was elitist. I'm not sure about that though. Mm-hmm. I'll probably argue with you later about that.
So we're back to your show. Okay, there's a show in Blackfish Gallery, but I haven't seen that, but I did go out to the site near the airport, 4 acres of private land. It's actually one of the artists' private land. So I talked to her, Alice Christine Walker. We're going to play a bit of audio of that in a minute. When you saw this bit of land, what was the kind of scale of work you imagined and how do you think it turned out?
That's such a great question. So it would seem very odd to me to do a land art show without, you know, sighted art outdoors, because that's in a very, not very good, you know, description of what land art is, but it is sighted work outdoors. And so when Alice generously donated her land and we talked a long time about what that was going to mean, then I felt like I could do the show. So it was very, very important. I also wanted to open it up to the artists and not have too much say in what they put up there, which would turn out to be good, because many artists went out there with one idea, saw what it looked like, had a whole different plan for their artworks. And I love that. So they were willing to roll with what it looked like in the environment in relationship to the other pieces out there, the weather, knowing that all their pieces were gonna be exposed, you know, there's weather, wind, possibly rain, there's heat, there's bird poop. I mean, you really have to let go a little bit, and which for artists is not always easy. Curatorially, I had lots of conversations with the artists, but then I kind of let them do their thing, which was wise because it turned out spectacular.
So as you go in the big metal gates, there is one right there. Isn't it Kristen Solomon, the gallery director?
Yeah, that's really interesting that a lot of the artists chose to do pieces that where the public would interact with them. You know, the public is going to interact with them anyway because they're going to be seeing them, having their own feelings and ideas about them. But some of them were very hands-on. It starts out with Kristen's piece, which is a labyrinth with pretty elaborate descriptions about how to work the labyrinth. There's a little desk, you write things down. Many of my artists used writing and rocks for some reason. Those were two very common media choices. And there you write down some intentions, I think, and then you walk the labyrinth. And I love it that the first piece you see is interactive. In other words, we're already inviting you in. You don't have to do it, but it's kind of a cool experience. When I was there with you, Joseph, for the soft opening, a couple of artists were there at dusk, filling out forms, wrapping rocks, walking the labyrinth. It's really awesome to see that piece in action. So I was viewing the piece and I was viewing them. They were looking at me. That was kind of what I hoped for.
Also, you're encouraged to grab a few rocks and build a cairn, like hikers build piles of rocks as they go.
Yes, Kelsey Bursa, that's an interesting piece because it's both in the gallery where you build a cairn inside the gallery, which people have loved doing and is actually surprisingly hard to do. And that's on a pedestal, just the way you would have artwork in the gallery. Then you go out to the landed art and you build it outdoors along the path, because sometimes those cairns were meant to make a mark on the path. So indoors is kind of what is your path that you're marking, and outdoors it's a physical path. So I love these correspondences between the two shows. I should mention that my work out there, which is an homage to Cadillac Ranch, another iconic piece I visited, that's in Texas.
Everyone's seen Cadillac Ranch, right? It's a row of Cadillacs at a sort of 70-degree angle by age, buried in the ground by the side of the road. And then people have graffitied it over the years.
Yeah, in fact, they're encouraged to. So one thing that attracted me to working with that image was that it was done by Ant Farm, which is a collective like Blackfish. We're a collective too. And so if you go there, again, can't encourage you enough, please go. You go there and they have like everywhere huge buckets of spray cans, and you meant to tag. Those are the most tagged cards you'll ever see. Take a little selfie of yourself in there. It's like an evening's entertainment. In the heat of Texas, you go out at night and you go tag Cadillac Ranch. I love that.
I didn't know it was all laid on. I thought it was Renegade Taggers. It's Amarillo, Texas. Like, is it just on the edge of town?
Yeah, it's not far out of town. And it's both Renegade Taggers. But, you know, this is kind of a commentary on that because it's also Encouraged Taggers. And actually near it is Amarillo Ramp, which was what Robert Smithson was surveying when his plane crashed.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So you did a row of skateboards.
Yeah, I thought that was, and you're very encouraged to tag my skateboards too. Yeah, it's a little cheeky to do it, but I felt like this was the Pacific Northwest. We're more, a little more of a skateboard bike culture. I could have buried bikes rather than maybe Cadillac culture. Possibly both. And I just love the way it looked. And I love the reminder of this other piece, a little echo of it. And I'd like to talk about the piece that's right above it. And that's Benz Mefford's called Ouroboros Branch of Ungovernment. And that was a really fun piece to watch him build because he had to clear the hillside. And then he left his clearings up there in little piles. And I thought that was the work. And I'm like, interesting, Ben. These little piles of branches. And he's like, I'm not quite done. How would you describe it, Joseph? Like a
it's like an igloo with one side sliced off. And inside there's a tree stump you can sit on. And then around the igloo it's cleared. And then the blackberry brambles sort of reassert themselves wider.
Wow, that's a great description and very accurate. You kind of, I mean, to get an idea, right, you have to go out and see it for yourself. This is land art. I love all the art out there, but that piece is really, I was blown away, especially to see it in process.
I didn't get what the Ouroboros was, the snake devouring itself, branches of ungovernment. Is it some comment on, I don't know, the U.S. government devouring itself somehow?
I would guess by the title, you're correct. We'd have to ask Ben to tell us for sure. But now that you say that, what's interesting is his piece in the gallery, which I wasn't completely sure was related to the outdoor piece, is a spiral of united rocks, kind of like a snake devouring itself. There, the correspondence sometimes is a bit subtle between these pieces sited outdoors and the ones indoors, but it's really fun and interesting to make those connections, which I didn't make until we were having this conversation.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Meridorn Duckler and Alice Christine Walker. They're talking about Sighted Land, which is an off-site show by Blackfish Gallery, which is available by shuttle bus tour only on Saturday, 13th, 20th, and 27th of August. And you have to go to blackfish.com for details. I'm going to play a bit of audio now where I walked around the site with Alice Walker. It's her land. She walked me through some of the art pieces. Let's hear what Alice had to say.
I'm Alice Christine Walker.
And this is your property?
Yes, sir, it is.
And have you ever done anything like this with art on your property?
I have not. I joined Blackfish Gallery about 2 years ago, and at that time, Meridorn was conceptualizing this exhibition. And she, you know, had asked us if anybody knows of a piece of property around the Portland area, not too far from the gallery. And I had been living out here not very long. And I said, hey, I think I might have the spot for you. And she came by and took a look, and I think was really inspired from the fact that there's, you know, the levee and these kind of odd buildings and the forest. And so it got pushed back. It was supposed to be last August in 2021, and we pushed it back to this year, obviously because of COVID. And
did you have any say in what the art would look like, apart from your own three?
I did not, but I am just a huge supporter of other artists and creativity, and letting, you know, encouraging other artists to not have any restrictions about what they do and really be inspired. There's a combination of pieces out here that people brought in, and then other pieces that, you know, the artists came out here and really, you know, worked the earth. And I think those are some of the most incredible pieces.
Mm-hmm. What's the one that looks like a little cave made of blackberries?
Yeah, so that's Ben Mefford's piece. He's one of the owners at Blackfish Gallery. So he spent the last week out here in this hot August sun. And he basically chopped about, the hill goes up the levee. He basically by hand chopped a blackberry, bundled up into brambles. He took burnt chards and coal from burn piles and forged wood from the forest, and he created this like kind of bramble cove up on the levee and worked in, so there's actually still blackberries growing up alive in it, and put a little chair in there. So it's this really interesting juxtaposition of a safe space that's not safe at all. It still feels quite dangerous. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we have a row of skateboards. How many are there?
Oh, let's count 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. So that's Mirdon Duckler's piece. Mm-hmm. And it was inspired by Cadillac Ranch. And so it's her homage to it. Just, you know, you obviously can't stick a bunch of old Cadillacs up out here. But the skateboards, the vintage skateboards, are all at 90 degree angles. And with a good sense of humor, she's provided pins and markup sticks for people to come and actually tag the skateboards while they're out here, you know, exploring and engaging the exhibition.
You're not really having anything that will stay forever, right?
No, not at all. Everything is temporarily sited. You know, I talked to Ben about coming and having a bonfire after all this. You know, we have some of the other artist pieces involve writing, you know, things that you want to get rid of and some other parts of it. So I think at the end of this, you know, there's artists will come and break down their pieces. And I think there's going to be a ritual kind of fire to transform what has been left out here. So. Mm-hmm.
What's this double bed under the pear tree?
Yeah, so it's a pear and a plum tree. This piece is called Requiem. It's actually one of my pieces, and it's an altered landscape. So A-L-T-A-R-E-D, landscape. And so all the papers are actually notes that were left in the secretive Ace Hotel curiosities drawer that's on the second level of the lobby. So it's thoughts and memories, you know, hidden secrets that people have written. And so they're hung up on the tree, and then also, you know, hand-done brambles, foraging of the flowers that are in bloom right now and the fruits. The bed has had an altar of banana leaves and the fresh fruits and berries and plums from the trees around here. So it's a softer side of land art with a little bit of a more feminine touch.
Mm-hmm. I guess you could Airbnb it out for
I wanted to take a nap here earlier. I'm not going to lie. We finished this piece today. We actually installed the whole thing today, and I was tired after, and I was like, it's because I've been looking at a bed all day. So, but yeah, I could probably get $125 a night for a glamping experience off this piece. So,
And how did you get all the Ace Hotels little private notes?
Yeah, so I'm actually the photo booth repair technician for the Ace Hotel. So.
Oh.
Okay. In 2020, when they were closing down the hotel for COVID, I was there taking the chemicals out of the machine, and I saw that they were doing renovations. And I was worried that they were actually going to take away the whole curiosity cabinet. So I just went up there and I asked the guys working there, hey, can I grab, you know, a couple handfuls of these notes? And they're like, no problem at all. And I, you know, tucked them away and found this was the perfect opportunity to kind of let people voyeur into the hidden workings and minds and dreamscapes of other people.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what's this bed piece called?
It's called Requiem.
Requiem. And who are the artists?
So it's myself, Alice Christine Walker, and Maggie McCloskey.
Okay. And then one more I got to ask you
about.
Oh,
absolutely.
These two mannequins.
Yes.
peeping out of what looks like a compost heap.
Yes.
But they've been jazzed up with, like, plastic flowers.
Yeah, yeah. This is another piece that kind of just came today. My good friend Maggie, the one who's also did Requiem with me, you know, we had a hard year this year weather-wise. We went from rain, full rain, and then all of a sudden, you know, summer solstice, the sun flipped on. Kind of getting this land ready, there were a lot of debris piles. And Charmaine Maggie was like, you know what, Alice, these debris piles are ripe for art. And she's like, I have some mannequin heads. And she's like, she thought of those Barbie quinceanera cakes where, you know, the Barbie heads on the top and the cake is the dress. And she's like, why don't I just, you know, kind of, you know, use that as a reference point and just stick some mannequin heads on these big debris piles and add some flowers and embellish them and take something that, once again, could be an eyesore and make it interesting and intriguing.
Mm.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks a lot.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure.
Thanks
we're so honored that you're
on KBOO.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a very Oregon piece of land. It's right by the levee, by the slough. It's blackberry brambles, it's trees everywhere. You know, I think it doesn't flood, but it gets pretty soggy during the winter. And they've had to kind of bushwhack these trails and mark them with stones and sticks so you know where you're going. In one of them, you go into a little grove, and there's a little clearing with these mannequins in white, and they're kind of tied up, and they have sort of human faces, but they also, they're sort of seven or eight of them, like kneeling or hunched on the ground. What's that piece called? Who's it by?
So that piece is made by Lauren Carrara, and it's called Chrysalis, Everything That Rises Must Converge. Perhaps a comment on the Flannery O'Connor writing, I'm not sure. I don't think so. Lauren has a background in science as well as art. And those pieces are really interesting to me because I first saw them at an indoor installation, and then I got to see them outdoors, and it was like a completely different experience to see them outdoors. Indoors, I don't know, I think all the time when I see that work, it has a little bit of a political overtone for me. I don't know that Lauren meant it that way, but like most artists, she's open to the viewers, ideas about it. When I saw them inside, I thought it was a commentary on homelessness. When I saw them outside, I thought it was a commentary on isolation, two sort of things that have been happening in our culture. Again, you have to ask Lauren herself what they mean, and I don't know that she's going to directly tell you, but they're very evocative, very kind of creepy in a wonderful way, and one of the most Instagrammable spots in the show.
They remind me of that Banksy thing where he did a kind of person dressed like a Guantanamo captive in an orange jumpsuit and stuck it in Disneyland. And it was just this weird kind of, oh, there's somebody all bound up in the middle of our nice little walk in the woods. But there are several of them. They also have like little plastic butterflies on their shoulders.
Yeah, that's a common motif for her. And as we're talking, I realized too, I think it's one of the few pieces that has figuration in it at all, which always we have a big response to that. We have an interpretive response to that, a little bit different than the rest, which are geometric. They're not figurative. They don't have faces. Kristen's piece has mirrors where you see your own face, but I think Lawrence might be the only one that has actual figures in it, which is kind of interesting to see those outside.
Talking of name-dropping Irish writers, there's two mannequin heads in a compost heap that remind me of Samuel Beckett's Happy Days.
Yes, that would be an incredible place to run a Beckett play. Yeah, and I want people to know that you can go in and have a complete experience and thinking about land art, looking at different artists' idea of what land art means by going into the gallery. And the same thing by just going to the outdoor sited art. But then there's also kind of a bridge between the two ideas that I'm really interested in too. So it's still completely fine to go see the show, go see the outdoor show, but it's really a unique opportunity. I can't think of another time this has been available. By the way, this is the first land art show in Oregon where you can do both. So it's a little bit of a commitment, but we wanted that commitment from the viewer. We wanted you to be immersed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Judy Chicago's sort of contention was this land art was a bunch of guys with bulldozers and blowing things up, and she wanted to do something different, so she did colored smoke in the landscape. Your take on this is, you know, this is kind of smaller, it's modest, it's kind of Oregonian. I think everything is going to be composted or disassembled at some point. What was your feeling about 21st century land art?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard these complaints before, sometimes they're from people who think of it only as a genre from the 60s and 70s, and a lot has happened since then. A lot of ideas about, you know, BIPOC, indigenous communities, Native American communities, like whose land is this actually? And all my artists were grappling with that. For me, it's always interesting to hear what ideas the artists have about land ownership, about our environment, about forest management. You know, again, I take this idea, this was a concept from the first land artists that these artists' voices should be heard. They should be as much a part of the conversation as nature lovers, as scientists, as city planners, because artists have their eye on space and nature, and they deeply contemplate what is our part in it. And we need to hear from them, and that was a big impetus from me for putting the show in. On the 20th, there's a performance that I wrote, and it's a conversation based on a conversation between Smithson and Holt called East Coast, West Coast. So I'm not performing it, but I wrote it. Jamie Ray's performing it.
I should tell the listeners, you write plays, and usually when you have a show, there's a lot of writing in it. What is it? What kind of performance? How long does it last?
It's in conjunction with Christina Resnick, who is a composer that uses ambient forest sounds, including a frog chorus. So it's her composition. And then after that, we're going to see this comedy that really talks a little bit about fun of land artists, including, of course, me, all these ideas that we're discussing about possession, about responsibility, about reverence, you know, for the land, our love of it, our conflicts about it, and also how artists view the impact of their work. And Smithson and Holt, this was a jokey interview they did with each other in 1969. I took the spirit of it and redid it for 2022.
And those dates are Saturday, the 13th, 20th, and 27th of August this year. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Meridorn Duckler and Alice Christine Walker. Meridorn curated the show Land Art at Blackfish and also the off-site show called Sighted Land, which is out near the Portland airport on private land accessible by shuttle bus. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Meridorn.
I loved it. Thank you so much, Joseph. Andy, whoa, whoa, looks